The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where please open your hymnals to page 15 and let us all rise together, set our sights to the goat above, and with one voice let us all sing, "He is him, it is lit." I'm your host Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host Tommy Alexander. Tommy, have you ever heard that liturgical worship song, "He is Him, it is Lit"?
I have not. I don't think I've heard that one.
Okay. Well, it's a classic. I would advise you and your family to, if you ever go to church, to sing that song. But you know what else is a classic? Last night's game versus the Clippers. Ayo!
Ayo!
So, as you all know by now, the Lakers ended their 11-game losing streak to the Clippers by beating them in overtime 130-125.
Spoilers.
And, man, what a game. That was a hell of a lot of fun. And just stepping aside a bit as a Lakers fan, if I was an outside observer and just tuned into that game for the first time, I think I'd instantly become a basketball fan after watching that game. There were like tremendous performances by several players on both ends, dramatic storylines that peaked and dipped for certain players throughout the game, namely Austin Reeves, insane highlight plays, obviously that Austin Reeves lob to LeBron James, our new Mona Lisa, and then several role players stepped up in huge ways, Kawhi and PG going off, Russell Westbrook actually having a pretty good revenge game till the end. And then LeBron obviously went supernova in the second half, especially the fourth quarter, and then the return of him. It was fun. It was lit. Tommy, what did you think? I know for a second there, it looked like it was going to be a very frustrating night for us Lakers fans, given the fact that the Lakers came all the way back from down 19 and then had a 9-point lead with 2 minutes left, and then started giving it all away, and then we had to go into overtime to finish it out, and it was looking like it was going to be a very frustrating night if we had come away with the L. But now that we have the W, and taking a step aside as a fan, I feel like that was the first Lakers-Clippers game that kind of lived up to the hype since these, you know, big duos were assembled, and since maybe that one game that we had against the Clippers in 2020, right before the league shut down due to COVID. But yeah, how did you feel just about watching the game? Was it fun to watch, even though I know you were DVRing it?
Yes, it was very fun to watch. And by the way, I DVR, but, and this is so annoying, and I don't know how long I'm going to be able to sustain this. I actually don't look at the score. So it's like,
yeah,
it's like,
smart.
It's like I'm watching it. It's like, I'm obviously not live, but I don't look at Twitter. I don't look at texts. I just try to take it at, you know, for what it is. But anyway, I texted you earlier in the day and I said, You know, the Clippers have traded four forwards and they have a depleted roster, but somehow, you know, Kawhi's going to go for 30, Paul George is going to go for 30, Bones and Norman Powell are going to go for 20 each, and we're going to lose. It's like, this is how, for some reason, this is how this team always plays against us. No matter who they have out there, no matter who we have out there, it's been such, we've lost to them so many times in a row. And it, you know, basically since the championship year, where I think we split 2-2 when they were coached by Doc at that point. Right. But like, yeah, it just, we've had like this barrier that we have not been able to cross against this team. And it started out exactly as I projected. Like, the Clippers were shooting 70% or something absurd in the first quarter. And look, the Lakers, especially in first halves, haven't been playing great defensively, in my opinion, so far. Maybe not a bad sign, because their second half defense seems to be a lot better, suggesting, you know, they're adjusting appropriately. But, you know, I just, like, it started going down the path that I thought it was going to go down. And the guys, like they've done in all five of our games so far, hung in there, played through, you know, whatever, I don't want to call it adversity and make it like overly dramatic, but played through, the slow start. And this roster, like, does not roll over. Like, okay, yeah, we were not as depleted as the Clippers, but Rui and Vando are like two guys who are pretty much acquired for like the purpose of playing teams like the Clippers, where, like, yep, you know, your main players are like big wings, right? So we had plenty of opportunity to just roll over like we did in most of our other, you know, first few games here, and we didn't. We hung around. Eventually in the second half, the shots started to fall. We were able to string together some defensive stops. We were able to put together some lineups, you know, that made sense, especially with those big lineups we used in the second half. And people can say what they want. People can say, oh, well, they didn't have Harden. Oh, they just were coming off a trade. Oh, it was the second night of a back-to-back. Nobody can pretend like this game didn't matter to both sides, right? And both sides have something to prove to each other, to the rest of the conference. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have not played like back-to-back games like this in how many years, dude? I mean, they were fighting, like jockeying for playoff position last year, and they were like holding Kawhi and Paul, like, you know, front night of a back-to-back, sitting Kawhi and Paul George in the second half because they were getting beat, and then second night of the back-to-back, just sitting them out, right? You know, like, this is the kind of Clippers, that's why they tend to be targeted when people talk about players resting, right? But anyway, they haven't played in years. Those guys played 40 minutes of a second night of a back-to-back. LeBron and AD were playing heavy minutes. This game obviously mattered to both sides. And it was an intense early season game, of which we've had several so far. And we hung around and we did what we needed to do to win. And those are the types of things that are going to help at the end of the season. Like, these are the kind, you know, people talk so much about resting and like making sure everyone's ready for the end. And like, that's why we can't play back to backs. But these are those moments where the guys just have to like come together, push through the tiredness, push through whatever, you know, push through the injuries on the fringes on the roster, and come together against a team that's playing well and figure out how to come up with a win. And you do that 82 times. Sometimes you win, sometimes you don't. But if you do that 82 times in good faith, it's going to help you in the playoffs. And I appreciate that this group is not trying to skip steps, which it feels like every team wants to do nowadays.
Yeah, no, and they did so in very entertaining fashion. I feel like at some point, LeBron James looked over at his family in the stands, saw his sons, and was like, this is so embarrassing that I keep losing to the Clippers like this. Enough already. And then that's when he went on that tear in the fourth quarter, when he had like 12 points on 5 of 6 from the field. I think he had 5 assists. Like, he had an incredible fourth quarter. I think whatever LeBron did in the fourth quarter already surpassed Austin Reeves' total averages this season. So just let you know, like, how well LeBron James played. There were so many different storylines for so many different players, I feel like. Even looking at, you know, the Russell Westbrook revenge game. So I think that's why, you know, when I say the game lived up to the hype, it really did. And I'm just glad that the Lakers were able to end this stupid 11 straight games lost to the Clippers streak. So
And let me just say one more thing that you reminded me of really quick on the LeBron point. He's had already a few games this year where he has stepped up in the fourth quarter in a big way. You recall in our championship season, even the year after, I mean, a big part of this team's identity since getting LeBron has been LeBron's ability to take over in the fourth. You know when we did not see that last year? Because and look, the minutes restrictions and all this and that have and will continue to be a big talking point, right? But and maybe, you know, people could look at the minutes LeBron played last night and played the game before and say, I guess the game before wasn't so bad, but you know, like a few games this year, he's been high 30s in minutes. And people could point to that and say, like, it's too much this early in the season. I think the reason he had this much energy is about how those minutes are managed within a game, right? I think that's the more important thing. He was coming off a 33-minute night against the Magic, okay, and then had a day off. But how many times last year did we go into fourth quarters with LeBron already at 30 minutes? You know what I mean? Like, just because, like, we had to just stay remotely competitive in the game. Now LeBron can come into the fourth in the mid-20s, like he's gotten his rest throughout, and he can kind of carry us the rest of the way. And I'm not saying that's like a recipe that, you know, you necessarily want to lean on for 82 games, but as this team finds its identity, like that is a nice thing to fall back on. And frankly, when playoff time comes around, that's what every team does. It becomes like we see it every year. I mean, the Nuggets, I think, are a pretty good exception to this rule, but even they, like, right, like late game situations, close games in the playoffs, the deeper you get, it's going to be pick and roll with your two best players. And then like trying to like figure something out from that, right? Like and so it's nice that LeBron is getting those reps now.
Yeah, and I think he's done a good job, and maybe the team and him are gaining a better understanding and rhythm of when to put the foot on the gas pedal, right? And to your point, look, the funny thing is, and we'll get to this in a second, but LeBron James took over in the second half and in the fourth quarter, but guess what he did in overtime? He paved the way for Austin Reaves to do his thing. He barely got any on-ball reps that overtime. So yeah, LeBron James, 12 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 1 steal, 5 of 6 from the field just in the fourth quarter alone. He looked like a madman out there. He was taking some wild one-footed fadeaway J's and threes. I thought he had lost his mind, but they kept going in. It kind of felt like someone was playing 2K and got control of LeBron, and the score didn't matter, and they were just trying shit out. But the Lakers were actually trying to mount a comeback at that point, and I was kind of questioning the shot selection, but LeBron was just on a heater, so it didn't matter. And he was also slinging the ball around too with 5 assists, obviously. Ended the night with 35 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists, 13 of 19 from the field, 4 of 8 from 3, his best game of the season.
Yeah,
LeBron
definitely.
James is 9 of 22 from 3 in his last 3 games. So nice to see his 3-point shot come around. Now the Lakers are 3-2. Last season, the Lakers didn't get their third win of the season till their 13th game in mid-November.
That's
And
crazy.
here we are through 5 games at the start of November, working things out, progressing day by day, still ahead of schedule. And yeah, again, coming into last night's game, the Lakers had lost 11 straight to the Clippers. The streak was finally snapped. I will say, I feel like the Clippers are going to be very scary with James Harden if they're healthy. How they manage the Russell Westbrook pairing and the usage distribution between them two, plus Kawhi and Paul George,
Well,
is going to be
yeah.
very interesting. But
Yeah,
that's
that's the
their
question.
problem. Yeah, that's their problem and not ours anymore. So good luck. But if they're healthy, I can envision a scenario and a high ceiling where they're a very potent offensive powerhouse that's going to be tough to guard. Now, it's going to be up to teams like the Lakers to then take advantage of them on the other end because they don't seem to be like a good defensive team, especially with all the forwards that they lost. And
Oh,
even
yeah.
though they have Zubats and Plumlee, clearly the Lakers were able to attack the interior.
Oh, yeah.
So let's see. Let's move on to what your best play of the game is. So I want to ask you what your best play of the game is and what your most important play of the game is. And I'm interested to see how you interpreted these two questions. I guess best play to me is kind of like, what's your individual like highlight play that stood out to you that was kind of fun? Most important play is kind of self-explanatory. So for best play, what do you want to go with? Maybe we'll put aside the Austin Reaves to the LeBron James lob because that's kind of, yeah, that was a Renaissance painting moment. And it was actually a pretty risky play because I think we were only up by like 2 points at that point. And the way Austin Reaves had been passing the ball the whole night, it could have easily been a turnover. So I was like, you sure you want to do this, Austin? But he threw a perfect lob and LeBron James was able to get up there and throw down the hammer jam. But outside of the Austin to LeBron lob of destiny, what is your best play of the night?
I think best play of the night, and maybe I don't know. There were so many. But the one I would maybe highlight for right now is the Christian Wood tip dunk at the end. And not just like, oh, he did a 360 reverse flip. Like, it was just a normal tip dunk, right? But I think it, like, you know, it's a nice symbol of all of the things that he's done positively for this group. The last couple nights, he's had good effort on the defensive end, good shot blocking, good secondary rim protecting. But the big, big, big thing has been the rebounding. Yeah. And that's what that play showed, right? Like, he didn't get the shot. He didn't, you know, the play wasn't called for him, but he crashed the boards on the offensive glass. He had an uncontested like lane. He took it. He grabbed the ball and just easily dunked it in, and that sealed the game, right? That made it a 5-point game, and that was it. So Christian Wood, we've talked said a lot of positive things about him so far, but that play to me was the play of the game. I mean, it led to the win.
Yeah. No, I like that. And obviously the context behind that shot, where if you guys haven't heard, apparently Christian Wood credited D'Angelo Russell for that play, because on the sidelines, you can see D'Angelo Russell telling Christian Wood, hey, if you don't get the shot, they're not boxing people out. Go for the board. And that's literally what he did. You know, Cam Reddish missed the three, and here's Christian Wood skying in with the two-handed putback dunk. So I like that play and everything that it stood for and how it was so emblematic thus far of Christian Wood's tenure with the Lakers, of just being a gritty garbage man type of guy who, you know, doesn't care about the shots he gets. So awesome. Another awesome growth play from Christian Wood. For me, my best play is the Austin Reaves crossover in the third quarter, where Anthony Davis actually trips up Norm Powell or Bones Highland, whoever was guarding Austin Reaves. But it didn't matter. Austin Reaves had the guy going the other way anyways. He pulls up for that jump shot. He's wide open and the crowd goes wild. The bench goes wild. And the reason why I picked this as my best play of the game is not because Austin Reaves crossed the dude up, because again, he kind of was aided by Anthony Davis tripping up his defender, but more so the fact that I feel like that play really instilled confidence back into Austin Reaves at a time where he was having such a horrendous game, dude. And given how his season has gone, the fact that you can say it got even worse is very telling. Like, he couldn't dribble the ball in the first half. He was making some boneheaded passes again. I was like, who is this player? I think I tweeted out at halftime a joke and comped him to, I tweeted out a picture of Nick Stauskas, and I was like, Austin Reaves right now. You know, so, I mean, that's how bad Austin Reaves was playing. But I feel like this shot really injected him with that him life, and he was able to regain his aura again. And I feel like this kind of subconsciously maybe set him up for what he ended up doing in overtime when he took over, you know? So that's why it was my best play of the game. Now, what is your most important play of the game?
Well, so it's funny you bring up the Austin thing, because I was going to bring it up for pretty much the same reason as my most important play. And so I guess I'll just build off what you just said. But, sure. You know, Austin, we've been chatting a lot about this offline, right? But Austin is a huge, huge part of what this team needs to do. If, you know, he's going to be a huge, huge part of this team if we're successful. If he's not a huge part, it's most likely we're not going to be successful. We're going to need both of our guards to hit shots. We're going to need them to make plays. LeBron is old at this point. Anthony Davis is a big man who needs to be set up. Like, we knew going into this season our two guards and how they play together, and everything, like their entire season was going to be very, very critical for us. So I think I had pretty much the same thought when Austin had that move, and then kind of how he responded in overtime as well. D'Angelo had another great game. He's had now strung together several great games. Even the first few games where his shooting numbers were not amazing, he was our best. Everyone's shooting numbers were crap. He was still like among our, among the bad shooters, he was doing okay. So like he's had a very, very solid start to the season. And, we've talked a lot about Austin. It's not just the numbers. It's not just, oh, his scoring is lower than I thought. Oh, he's shooting 20% from three. Like, it's not just that stuff. It was just like the whole overall like picture that we were getting from him. Like in the past, Austin would score 6 points, but he would be a plus 13, and like you just felt his impact in every facet of the game. I mean, we would talk about it all the time last year, but in the midst of Russ and Lonnie and a lot of these like kind of wild guards we had who would turn the ball over a lot. Even LeBron sometimes gets a little loosey-goosey with the ball, right? Like there was some stretch last year where Austin had like 4 games in a row with no turnovers, and he was getting assists, you know what I mean? And handling the ball. And so that was always the thing about Austin. It was never this like, is he an all-star? Is he not an all-star? Like, that's not the debate. The debate is like, how impactful of a player is he, and in what ways? And I think the thing, he showed that he could be more of an impactful player as a scorer in the playoffs. But, and that's great, and by the way, if he can continue to do that. But like his overall, like, I'm going to get you some rebounds, I'm going to get you some assists without turning it over, by the way, because they're going to be like smart plays. I'm going to have good awareness on both ends, so I'm going to get the steals on defense because I'm a smart player. Maybe I don't get the assists on offense, but I'm going to get the hockey assist because I'm a smart player. Like, you just always felt confident that Austin was not going to screw something up. And through 4 games, that did not feel like the case. You almost like cringed when he touched the ball, because it was almost like his turnovers were higher than ever. Like his shooting percentage was lower than ever, and it didn't feel like the same guy. And you did, then the doubt starts to creep in, and I'm sure it did for him as well. And it's like, well, who is this guy really, right? And then you're right. He got that play. He got the crowd excited. He hit a mid-range jumper. You could sort of sense his confidence growing a little bit. And then he carried that into the overtime period, and hopefully into future games. And that's why I say it's the most important play for me in the game. Or sorry, yeah, most important play for me. Because going forward, we really, really need this guy to step it up. And if he just plays like, again, I think he shot 5 for 12 or 5 for 13. It was not a great shooting night. A lot of those misses, granted, were in the first half, when he did play a lot worse than he did in the second half and overtime. But I'm less fussed about the 5 for 13 and more, interested in the assists. I think he had 7 assists. I think he had like seven boards. Like those are the things that are going to be. He had like 2 or so steals. Like those things are so much more important for this group. And if he can build a little bit off of, the momentum of his success in the last game, and start to string together several decent games in a row, it's just going to make everybody else's life so much easier.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think maybe like 4 of his 5 turnovers all came in the first half. And then in overtime, he had 7 points, which led the entire Lakers team. And overtime was kind of like a mirroring of, the I am him game versus Memphis, where it was high pick and roll with him and AD, and he's going down the lane, snaking the pick and roll at 100 miles per hour, and then just pulling up out of nowhere and getting his defender up in the air. He's pump faking, he's spinning, he's getting and ones. He hit an and one mid-range jump shot, and then he got Norm Powell with a head fake, and then hit another jump shot, got some free throws, and then he got that lob to go with LeBron James that really set the house on fire at Crypto.com Arena. And it was just, a perfect ending for Austin Reeves. You kind of got to see the peaks and valleys of his entire journey that whole game. And at the end, Anthony Davis and LeBron James bum rushed him. I forgot what they were yelling. They were like, go win the game, Austin, go win the game, or something like that. But that was a nice sort of punctuation moment for the entire team, that everybody still believed in him. D'Angelo Russell's been trying to uplift him during this tough time, and the fact that LeBron James and Anthony Davis kind of let him do his thing again at the end of overtime and trusted him to do so. Really great story arc there in a random Lakers-Clippers game on a random Wednesday night. My most important play of the game, this is going to be super hipstery, but very simple. My most important play of the game is kind of two plays, but kind of the same concept. And it is D'Angelo Russell sinking both of his free throws at the end of regulation to make it a three-point game. Yeah. And then Austin Reeves sinking both of his free throws at the end of overtime to also make it a three-point game. And the overall theme here is clutch free throw shooting from our guards. And it's just what a relief to have, you know, because...
Yeah.
Last season, the past couple of years, that's either going to LeBron James or AD, who are at best doing one of two from the line, right? And the fact that our guards can go in there, our skill guards, and you can actually rely on them to hit both free throws. If they had missed one of those free throws, we're not in overtime. You know, Paul George goes down and hits that three and they're up by one.
Right.
So huge clutch free throw shooting that I don't think Lakers fans should be taking for granted. So those are my most important plays of the game. All right, let's take it to break. When we return, I want to talk some Cam Reddish, and then we'll also talk about some Christian Wood and any other macro takeaways we had from the game. So we will catch you guys after the turn.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so we are back. Tommy, before we get to Cam Reddish, what were your thoughts on the Christian Wood, Jackson Hayes, Anthony Davis triple towers lineup of death? Where when Darvin Ham trotted that out, everybody was losing their minds on Twitter. They're like, what the hell is this? And then they were the most dynamic group of the night, dude. They were.
It was amazing to watch, and I hope we see more, by the way. But you go ahead first, and I'll give you my.
Yeah, I mean, they were so dynamic, athletic, lanky. They were explosively scary. It was a lot of fun to watch. And I think it's crazy because Christian Wood, you see him get switched out onto Kawhi. You see him get switched out onto Kevin Durant. You also saw Jackson Hayes get switched out onto Kawhi a couple of times last night. And our bigs can hang with these wings on the perimeter, you know? And because of that, it's almost like you get this weird-ass dynamic between all of these power forwards and centers where they can just switch everything, you know? And it doesn't matter if they're camped out or isolated out on the perimeter against these ball-handling wings. They can hang. And because they're so long... I mean, look, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, they can drive it into the lane, but they're kind of professional jump shooters at the end of the day. They want to shoot a mid-range jump shot. And because Jackson Hayes and Christian Wood and Anthony Davis have the length that they do, if they can just shuffle their feet a little bit and stick with them, then they can contest that shot way better than a Max Christie, even a Cam Reddish, you know? So to me, defensively, like, it also allowed Anthony Davis to play up. Because he knew, oh, Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes are behind me to protect the rim. I don't have to be the sole rim protector. And then at times, Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes could be defending the perimeter against Kawhi and Paul George because they know Anthony Davis is back there. So it's just like, I don't know, the mobility and agility of that group alongside their length was kind of really caused the Clippers a lot of problems. So yeah, your thoughts.
I guess, like, and this is like something that I feel like we have to talk about so often, but for some reason it just always comes up, right? I think the lazy take of the last decade in the NBA is big men don't matter, size doesn't matter, and it's all perimeter shooting. I think here's what has changed. In the old days, in the 90s, early 2000s, especially, you know, you think of the Lakers with Shaq, you needed a semi-competent big man to have a chance. I think now you do not. But that does not mean that it's not like you can't win playing big. We won 2 years ago playing 82 games big. I mean, we played big in several series in the playoffs. You know, we didn't play big against Miami in the finals. We didn't play big against, I can't remember who we played after. Oh, against Houston, obviously. But we played big against Denver. We played big against Portland, you know, and we imposed our size on these teams. What we saw last night with this group was these guys imposing their size on, mm-hmm. on this team. And by the way, you know, this is, I give the coaching staff huge, huge props for even trying something like this. We did not see this in the preseason.
Yeah.
And they were like, let's just bring this out and see what the hell happens. And it's smart because AD can really move his feet on the perimeter. So if you're thinking about like who between the 4, 5, and 3, AD can guard the 3. Wood has shown that he can guard 4s. And then you have Hayes as the last line of defense. It solves the rebounding problems that we've had, you know, with some of our yep. other lineups. But it also, you know, it because Wood can hit 3s at a decent clip, and even AD this mm-hmm. year can hit some mid-range jumpers. Like, I can't remember if he took a 3 in the Clipper game, but he's obviously hit his share of 3s this year, right? So he's not completely, like, shooting 25% or something this season like he has in the last couple of years. So because of that, you know, and Jackson Hayes' supreme athleticism, you can get away with a lot of things. And guess what? If you're missing shots, you have 3 huge guys who can crash the boards. I mean, the Denver Nuggets, like, are they an elite perimeter shooting team? Of course. But they did not win the championship last year because of their elite perimeter shooting. They won the championship because of their shooting, but they pounded teams inside. I mean, they play Jokic at the 5, who's a load, right? And then they play Michael Porter Jr., who's like a 6'10 small forward, and Aaron Gordon, who's 6'9 at the, you know, as a 4, but like is super strong and athletic and is really wants to play like in the low post and around the rim. So, and that was like, you know, Bruce Brown, big guard who plays physical, like, they physically dominated teams. They physically dominated mm-hmm. us in the playoffs last year. That's why we lost. And physical domination is still a formula for success. I know that the Warriors have a lot of guards who can shoot 3s. I know that the Clippers now have this crazy team, you know, that has like some of the most elite perimeter shooting players in NBA history or perimeter players in NBA history. So like, I understand that these teams exist. I just still think that like, you know, we kind of saw a preview last night because guess what? The Clippers might have been missing James Harden, but James Harden is not fixing anything defensively against that lineup, right? So, like, you want to put your lineup with, you know, Kawhi and Paul George and, like, 3 guards out there, which, by the way, with their new roster, they're going to have to run a ton of 3-guard lineups. But, you know, again, just using the Clippers as an example, like, fine, you want to put that lineup out there? Like, AD, Jackson Hayes, and Christian Wood are going to destroy you. I mean, they had no answer for these guys in the paint. And it just felt like a manhandling. And that is still a recipe to win some games, okay? So the nice thing about this roster, what we talked about it all offseason, is we have the personnel to win in multiple ways. We don't need to have a night, you know, where we're hitting all of our perimeter shots. We don't need to, you know, play. We don't need to everything to click right the exact, you know, the same way every single night to win, like some teams do. We can win in different ways. Some days we'll beat you with our perimeter shooting. Some days we'll beat you with our defense and transition. Some days we can just physically dominate you with our size and LeBron and AD and Wood and Hayes. There's so many things we can do. And big, big props to the coaching staff for trying that lineup because, you know, for all the crap we gave Darvin last year for his like wonky 3-5 guard lineups that he deployed at various times, like I did not expect to see this group even tried. And he tried it game 5 of the season.
Yeah, and it was kind of out of desperation, though. You know, I'm not taking anything away from Darvin Ham, but it kind of leads to my next segue, or it perfectly segues us into, you know, I feel like it was almost a blessing in disguise that both Gabe Vincent and Torian Prince were out because I think it allowed Darvin Ham to try this big man unit out, and he couldn't go to Gabe Vincent, who provides that scrappy, gritty defense. It's like, well, let's see how this three-headed monster, this three-headed big man lineup works, and it worked out to perfection. And I'm hoping, because he saw that, he will continue to trot it out even when Gabe Vincent and Torian Prince are out. And you remember one of the podcasts that we had in the offseason, I asked you, and I didn't even include Jaxson Hayes into this group, but I was like, is this the most versatile and talented and skilled forward crop that we've ever had since Pau, Odom, and Bynum, right? And you said it probably is. And I can say that while still not having seen a lot of Rui Hachimura and Jared Vanderbilt this season, you know?
Yeah.
So include them into this group, and it's just like, problem is more, how do you find enough minutes for these guys so that they can stay in a rhythm? But man, it's like...
And just to add on to that, you've kind of already seen it. And the problem is it hasn't been a big enough sample for us to fully see how they'll deploy these guys, right? But we did a pod after the first couple of games and we brought this up. The way that these guys are all going to get minutes is if we play big. And that means that Gabe, D'Angelo, and Austin are not taking 100% of the backcourt minutes. That means that Torian has to slide down sometimes. You could play LeBron at the one and just play that same group of three, like massive forwards plus LeBron plus another, maybe one smaller guard. You know, like there are ways that we can do it. And I think the fact that these sorts of big lineups have had success early is a really, really, really good thing for this team, because now I have some confidence that Darvin is going to continue trying these types of things. Yeah. Like, screw it, dude. Let's throw like AD, Vando, Rui, LeBron, and Gabe Vincent out there and just see what happens. You know what I mean? It's like, Gabe is really more of a two on offense anyway. You have LeBron to play the one. Gabe can guard the small guards. And then you just have a massive group that are just going to pummel teams on the inside. Like, it's going to be a manhandling. And that's what we did, right? It's like, again, we're not looking that far away from a recipe that worked 3 years ago. Like, people kind of undersell it because of how the playoffs went. We played 82 games effectively with three centers. AD rarely played center. It was like 30% of his minutes were playing the five, but we had these AD and Dwight Howard lineups that would go out there and just manhandle teams in the paint. And Dwight had his resurgence here and all this and that. So, you know, this formula can still win you games in the modern era. And I think as, you know, teams adjust to the Nuggets, and certainly in the future with Wemby on the Spurs, like, you're going to see more and more of this, right? Like teams realizing, okay, I guess like playing guys all 6'7" and under at all five positions is not necessarily going to help us win every night.
Yeah, we need to impose our will and force teams to go big again against us, because we actually have the personnel to do so. And even if you compare this to what happened in 2019-20, I mean, these guys are way more offensively versatile as well. So it's just, keep trying it is all I'm going to say. Let's close this episode talking about the maybe most polarizing player on this roster, the surprise start of the night, Cam Reddish. I told you he was good, Tommy. He apparently found out that he was starting pretty much a minute before he was starting. And when I say he's a polarizing player, Tommy, I mean it. Because when people found out that Cam Reddish was starting in place of Torian Prince, oh boy, did they lose their shit. And I'm talking about Lakers fans. And I don't know what it is about. I mean, I guess this is just, you know, again, people know Twitter is not a real place, but I don't know what it is about some Lakers fans and some people on Twitter who like to think they're smarter than they really are and think they have this shit all figured out. And so they like to pile on some of these like wild high upside players who haven't panned out yet, thinking that, you know, I've seen enough of this guy's play. He's never going to work out. Let's not even give this dude a chance. And yeah, people were losing their minds over Cam Reddish getting burned in the preseason, saying that his time in the NBA is done after one preseason game.
That's crazy.
And then again, they were losing their minds this week when Darvin Ham had an interview and he said that he just wanted to get a look at Cam first before Max Christie. And they're like, oh my God, this isn't fair. What a horrible message to send to homegrown talent Max Christie, who's worked hard all summer. I know, I was like, Max Christie has worked hard all summer, and you're going to let Cam Reddish get minutes? And I'm like, how do you know Cam Reddish wasn't working hard all summer too?
Yeah. He wasn't homegrown, Jonathan.
He wasn't homegrown, Cam Reddish. And people just losing their minds over this Cam Reddish stuff and thinking they've got this guy all figured out because he hasn't lived up to the lottery hype and because he doesn't seem like a high basketball IQ player. And so people want to seem smart on Twitter, right? And what do you know, after all that outrage, he ends up being our best non-AD, non-big man defender out there on the perimeter last night.
Oh, and really,
by far, and he ignited the Lakers in transition.
Oh, yeah.
Cam Reddish only had 8 points and shot 2 of 7 from the field, but he probably generated 12 to 14 points off of his defense alone. Like, the way the Lakers were able to score right off the bat off a Cam Reddish block, a Cam Reddish steal, was insane. The Lakers, fast break-wise, they had 23 points to the Clippers' 9 points. That's huge. And a lot of that, again, was ignited by Cam Reddish's defense. His defensive activity, his tenacity, the fluidity and mobility that he had snaking through these screens defensively, shadowing PG and Kawhi. Look, a lot of people are going to say, what are you talking about? Kawhi Leonard had 35 points. Paul George had like 38 points. Paul George shot well from the field. Like, those stats do not tell the tale of what Cam Reddish did last night. And I cut up some tape of everything he did last night. And the field goal percentage doesn't show how many times Cam Reddish got those guys to turn the ball over. You know, it doesn't show when Cam Reddish cut off a driving lane to cut off one of Kawhi Leonard's driving lanes where he had to pass it out to Russell Westbrook for a bad 3-point shot. It also doesn't show when Cam Reddish had to be switched on to other guys like Bones Highland, Norman Powell, Russell Westbrook. And he did a fantastic job on those players as well. He was contesting shots like his life depended on it last night. I was just super impressed by the guy, and more so impressed because I know what the discourse was surrounding his start last night and what the discourse has been through freaking 5 games of the regular season at the start of this season, you know, and like what people are saying and just the pylon. And I'm like, can people act like we've gone through seasons with Russell Westbrook as our starting point guard? This is a veteran minimum dude who's getting 14 minutes at most. And when he got his first start, he showed out defensively and really ignited us. And I feel like now the talking point on Cam Reddish is the fact that he sucks on offense, right? He's not giving anything on the offensive end. And for me, I'm like, do you know how telling that is, that people are now, like, their go-to slight on Cam Reddish is he sucks on offense? Because coming into this season, or coming into anytime Cam Reddish comes to a new team, like, the hype surrounding him always has to do with his offensive production and what a bucket he is. So for me, I think the offense is going to come around. And even if it doesn't, we're not asking Cam Reddish to be an on-ball primary creator anyways. We just need him to shoot threes or hit some of his threes. And even in spite of the fact that he hasn't been able to hit his three-point shots, he still has more three-pointers than Gabe Vincent on the season, sadly. And I know the misses look really bad, but it's not like Cam Reddish doesn't have a history of getting hot from three or having hot stretches from three. He shot like 38% with the Hawks through half of the season before he got traded to the Knicks, okay? But regardless, the defense is where it was at with Cam Reddish. He made life difficult for Kawhi Leonard, Paul George. If that's not reflected on the field goal percentage, it is reflected in the turnovers that they had. It's reflected in the Lakers' fast break points. It's reflected in the fact that Kawhi Leonard started out blistering hot in the first half and only ended the game 4 of 10 in the second half in overtime. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Cam Reddish? Because he is surprising and shutting a lot of people up.
So I agree with some of what you said and disagree in some other ways. But here's my perspective on the Cam Reddish stuff. I don't like Cam Reddish as a player. I was always confused about the trade rumors. I watched this guy at Duke, right? When he was at Duke, we were still back in like a lotto team status, right? So he was highly touted. He was going to be a top 10 pick. Everyone knew at that time, right? From his Duke days, I always thought Cam Reddish looks like a basketball player who doesn't actually know how to play basketball. But, and so I guess that the area I disagree with you a little bit on is, and maybe I just am not aware of his reputation, but I never viewed Cam Reddish as like, oh, this guy's going to come in and like provide an offensive spark for us. That to me has never been his game. It's always been like what he's projected to be maybe one day. I mean, if people remember when he was coming out of college, he got a lot of Paul George comps because of his size and his fluidity moving around with the ball. And you can see it in bursts. But what I will say is Cam Reddish always had the tools to be a great defender. He's tall. I mean, he's huge, right? He's a solid 6'8". And we talk a lot about these wings who are 6'6 guys with 7 foot wingspan, 6'7 guy with a 7'1 wingspan. Sometimes like size is size, you know. Cam Reddish has the wingspan, but he is a solid 6'8", and he's strong and he's athletic, and he always had the tools on the defensive side. And I always wondered, like, yeah, maybe the shot is inconsistent. Maybe he's bricking some wide open shots, but he can hit enough to maybe keep a defense honest, which is all you really need. But why is he not able to stay on the floor? Why is he not able to figure out how to use these tools to his advantage on the defensive side? And this year, and again, I did not follow him that closely. Just probably box score watching like anybody else was, you know, for non-Laker players a lot of the time. But he is so much better defensively than I could have ever imagined. I mean, and I don't know how much of this is new and how much of this is just who he's always been. The way he moves around the perimeter, dude, it's like a 6'8". I mean, he's like as big as LeBron James. And he's like moving around on the perimeter and, you know, sliding through these screens like he's a guard, like he's Gabe Vincent. I mean, he is so fluid, and he's using all of his tools. He's using that length. He's blocking shots on the perimeter. He's disrupting the hell out of passes on the perimeter. He's jumping passing lanes to get, like, you know, easy steals to create buckets for himself or his teammates. He picked Paul George clean on the crossover. Paul George has one of like the tightest handles in the NBA, and he's known for that, right? And Cam Reddish just one-on-one ISO picked him clean and led to a fast break. You know, so it's like he has exceeded my wildest expectations through five games on that end. I understand the general sentiment that like guys want to see Max Christie get a chance because, you know, the Lakers have a history of finding these second round picks who were maybe undervalued and developing them internally. And everybody saw the physical jumps that Max made. Everybody saw the actual on-court production jumps Max made certainly in the summer league. And even in the first, I would say the first half of the preseason games, at least. And so I could understand like an argument that like, I just want to see how that all fits or how that works in real NBA action. I get that, but it's an overreaction. Cam Reddish is 4 years older. He's 4 years more physically developed. I'm not even going to get into the technicalities of who is technically better right now and all this and that. But all I'm saying is he deserves his shot too. We are at the end of the day trying to win a game. As far as my eyes can tell, Cam Reddish and Max Christie are both expiring contracts. We have no idea if we're going to be able to retain Max Christie, and we need to win it. We're trying to win a championship this year. So it would be completely foolish to not give this guy a look and see what he can do. Now, when Rui and Vando and these types of guys are back in the rotation, maybe it becomes a different discussion. And it's like, if Cam is taking minutes from those guys and those guys seem productive, like maybe that's a discussion we can have. I just think doing the Max Christie like direct comp and saying like, oh, you can't say with a straight face objectively overall on both sides of the court right now today, I can tell you for 100% with 100% honesty, Cam Reddish is a better player than Max Christie, or Max Christie is a better player than Cam Reddish. You cannot say it. So try both and see what happens. And like I said, I was a huge Cam Reddish skeptic. I've disliked the guy pretty much his entire career. I'm sorry, I don't dislike him. I dislike his game. I've never really seen him, you know, in real NBA action, even in college where he was doing things that I'm like, yeah, this guy gets it. I've never had those moments. And I've been so, so surprised with what he's done in his short burst this year. I mean, again, This is not like a Avery Bradley situation where the dude is running for 35 minutes a night out there because he's our only guy playing perimeter defense. We're talking about, like, between these two guards, him and Max, who are going to be, or big forwards, whatever you want to call them, who's going to be the guy who can step up and for 10 minutes play some defense, and if we need it in a crucial moment. That's what we're looking for. And viewing it through that lens, there's no way you can tell me that Max Christie is certainly better than Cam Reddish. It's not possible.
Well, and here's the thing. You don't necessarily even have to pit them against each other, because I really liked the looks of both of them out there at the same time last night when Max Christie also got time, because you can switch both of them. And Max Christie, you know, even though he didn't shoot the ball well, I think he had like a team high 9 deflections last night or something. So he even showed out really well defensively as well. And I think, again, we saw some looks of them paired together defensively in the preseason too. And I really liked how physical both of them were, except Cam Reddish has like 2 or 3 inches on Max Christie and has a longer wingspan. And Cam Reddish almost detonated the hell out of Ivica Zubac on that baseline, you know, posterized dunk attempt that almost blew the roof out of Crypto.com Arena. It certainly blew the roof out of the Lakers bench, who they lost their minds for a second there. And the other thing about Cam Reddish, outside of his fluidity and mobility, is even though he looks rail thin, he's also pretty strong, and he's able to absorb these body contacts and really hang with guys like, yeah, with these beefier, stronger, more cut guys like Kawhi Leonard and Paul George defensively. So it's not just that he can stick with them, but it's like he's taking these body blows and he's holding his ground, which is what I was really impressed by. And to clarify my point on Cam Reddish's reputation as an offensive player, I'm saying it more as what a lot of other NBA players of his ilk were saying with regards to Cam Reddish
other
being
NBA
a bucket.
Players have big respect for Cam Reddish, I will say, for some reason.
Well, no. And I'll tell you too, like, when if you've ever seen Cam Reddish during his hot streaks with the Atlanta Hawks, the way that he gets his points are on ball creation. He's dribble driving and doing these Paul George snaking the pick and rolls, pulling up for mid-range jump shot stuff. He just doesn't do it consistently well, and he doesn't have the as tight of a handle as Paul George, and so you'll frequently see him turn the ball over. It's almost like the THT dynamic, right? When THT was on and when he was hot, he looked like one of the best young players in the league, and then you saw that type of THT, you're only getting one out of every 5 nights, and then the other 4 nights is a complete disaster on the offensive end. He's not making the right reads. He's not making his teammates better. All he can do offensively is one-on-one type stuff, and if that's not going for them, then they're completely lost. So that's what I'm saying about, you know, Cam Reddish coming into this. Like, a lot of his hype has always been about his offensive production, and I just find it funny that people are complaining about his lack of offense when really what I think they're saying is he's just not hitting his threes, because the Lakers are not going to ask Cam Reddish to be an on-ball primary creator, right? That doesn't even matter. It's just hit your baseline threes and we're good. Even if you don't, continue to run the floor hard, continue to find the open spaces with these off-ball cuts, and continue to just play defense. Because at the end of the day, if we can even just get a better Troy Brown like proxy, I'll live with that for 14 minutes a game. And at the end of the day, maybe the floor here is just, he is like a stopgap stand-in for Jared Vanderbilt. And that's fine, because what he's shown us is just maybe our ceiling defensively is even higher than we thought if we can roll all of these guys out there. But yeah, that'll do it for our episode. Fun game against the Clippers. Glad we got the win. 3-2. Any win we can get at this stage while we're still trying to figure things out is very important and crucial. And yeah, that was a really fun game. D'Angelo Russell, great game again. He's on the season averaging 19.7 assists, 47% from the field. Tommy, we both had a predictions episode where we thought the other person had a pretty bold take on D'Angelo Russell. I feel like you said D'Angelo would average 20 points this season. I said, that's crazy. I said D'Angelo Russell would average a career-high 7.2 assists. You thought I was crazy. Well, guess what? He's averaging 19 points and 7 assists, and he might do both. So it's crazy. Like, props to D'Angelo Russell. He's really stemmed the tide for Austin Reeves here in this early part of the season, while Austin Reeves has tried to regain his groove. And there was a stretch in the third quarter there where D'Angelo Russell went on an off-ball cutting spree and hit like four straight buckets just off of cuts. And in the third quarter, D'Angelo Russell had 12 points, 3 assists on 5 of 6 from the field. So kudos to D'Angelo Russell as well. Also glad that we don't have Russell Westbrook on our team anymore. With that said, we will catch you guys next time. And hopefully the Lakers will come back from our road trip with a winning record. So yeah, I'm tired. Anyways, lots of fun, lots of lit. I can't talk anymore. Tommy, I will catch you later.
Peace.
See ya.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.